What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. You can go through some things and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you.
All right, guys, let's talk about something we all need. High quality, comfortable, stylish clothing that actually holds up in real life. Whether you're grinding at work, hitting the gym, or just hanging out, the Normal brand has you covered. I've been rocking their gear, and let me tell you, it's not your average clothing line. They've nailed it perfect with the perfect blend of durability, comfort, style. Whether it's a go-to rugged Henley, a hoodie, a button-down that doesn't make you feel like a stiff, the Normal brand is where it's at. The best part is you can support the show while upgrading your wardrobe. Just hit the link in the description below. Check out their collection. Trust me, once you try it, you'll wonder why you didn't do it sooner. The Normal brand. Made for real life, built to last. Now go check them out.
Shout out to our friends over at Captain Beard Co. Guys, if you are looking for beard care products, shampoo, conditioner, body wash, give Captain Beard Co. a try. They have this unbelievable beard butter, balm, oils, and then it smells amazing. Ladies, if you're looking for something for your men as a gift, to help with their grooming, check them out. Also, if you guys are looking to just set the mood one night, candles, unbelievably smelling candles made with all natural ingredients here locally to St. Louis. Give them a shot. Also, while you're there, use the promo code Zach and Pat for 10% off your purchase.
Hey there, guys. I really appreciate you checking out the Zach and Pat Show. If you can obviously tell, we are a newer podcast, but one way we're really trying to grow the show is trying to get up the amount of subscribers we have. So, you know, if you're watching the show and you're getting something out of it, we'd really appreciate it if you could click that subscribe button. That would help us out a ton. Please click that button. And now back to the show.
We have a very special guest in studio today. He's a good friend of mine. I trained with him at Watson Martial Arts. He's a blue belt under Kyle. He is the owner operator of River City Ironwork, the great and powerful Brian Bunfill. Welcome to the show.
What's up, guys? Sir.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me, man. Doing great.
Absolutely. Well, Brian, why don't you, just tell, the people out there that don't know you just a little bit about yourself, and we'll kind of get into the weeds here.
Right on. My name is Brian. I grew up on the other side of the river. I grew up in the Belleville area. I actually grew up in the town of Swansea, which is like right next to Belleville. It's just easier to tell people Belleville, I grew up there, went to Belleville East High School, graduated in 08, became a dad in 09. Got a full-time job immediately out of high school. I graduated a semester early, took a full-time job right away as a welder and a fabricator in a shipyard. Did that for a couple of years, like almost 5 years. And then I got accepted into a union apprenticeship in 2012 and like never looked back.
Really?
Met my wife in 2018, moved here into St. Louis in 2021 and like been living the best life ever since, man.
That's awesome.
It's crazy. I love it here. I love the city.
So do I, bro. So do I. Now what made you kind of go toward the ironworking path? Like what was the kind of draw to that?
I took some shop classes in high school, and that really seemed to stick. Like growing up, my dad was an electrician. He's a maintenance electrician at an industrial incinerator. Growing up, like if it broke, we fixed it. You know what I mean? There was major house projects and undertakings like my dad was like, oh yeah, we're gonna do it here ourselves, you know. Everything was DIY. And then I took some shop classes in high school, particularly welding, and it's just like it stuck, man. Yeah,
seemed like fun.
I had like strong aspirations to be a rock star. And it didn't work, so
what instrument?
I was a drummer. I'm still a drummer.
Still drummer.
It's like once you start, you never stop. Actually my dad is a singer in a bar cover band.
Okay. What band?
Shout out Lower the Bar. And actually I played in original bands like growing up, really like until my daughter was born. And like that's really what I wanted to do, was be a musician. And
really? Then, like, I didn't know that about you.
It's a previous life, man. It's a previous life.
I was in some bands growing up as well. I was never very good.
What did you play?
Played guitar.
Did you? Yeah. You still play guitar?
No.
No? Okay.
I haven't touched a guitar probably since I was like, really ever since I got into like, when I really got it, probably my sophomore year of high school is probably when I stopped playing guitar. It's always something like I say, oh, I'm going to pick it back up.
You know what? Going back, I take I take back my skill that I wanted to learn of being in the kitchen from our question and answers the other day.
Yeah.
And I wanted to learn a an instrument.
Yeah, I always wanted to play the drums. Like that was like always the instrument I wanted to play. You know, I've always just like been fucking like you if you see me in my truck by myself, like listening to a song I like, I'm banging on the studio.
He's having the studio, yeah.
Oh, for sure.
I do that too, but it probably sounds way better than when I do it than compared to when you do it. So
probably, yeah, because you actually you know what you're doing.
Yeah, so I was, you know, I really wanted to be a musician. And like I really, you know, I graduated high school a semester early.
Okay.
I graduated in December of 2007 and I walked with my class in May of 08, but like I turned 18 in November, got a full-time job in January.
Damn.
So like I was literally
right into it.
Literally barely. And I got a full-time job cause I wanted to fund what I was hoping was going to be a music career. You know what I mean? Didn't work out that way. You know, my daughter was born in 09 and it was like, keep pursuing this or like be literally the best version of a father that I could be. And I was like, well, it's like, it's a no brainer. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I packed the drums up and like the full-time job, it was no longer just a means of funding my music path. It was like, now we got to pay bills. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, it was tough being like a young dad and stuff and the adjustment. I feel this for everybody really, like the adjustment from going from like being a student and a young adult to like being a full-time employee and like just like a full blown adult is a hard adjustment.
Oh yeah.
Even for like new grads, like I see, like I've got people in my family and stuff that are like, have recently entered the workforce. You know what I mean? It's like college graduates or trade school and stuff. And I always feel for them. Cause I'm like, man, I know that adjustment is so hard.
Yeah. You know? You're not prepared.
Yeah. That adjustment is so hard, man.
Well, I was listening to this on a podcast recently and it was like, the whole concept was like, there's no real adults. Like, you know, like I still kind of feel like a kid at heart. I've just like learned some more shit.
100%,
you know? 100%,
yeah. You know, now I just pay taxes, right?
Yeah, now I just pay taxes and bills and all sorts of shit. It's just, you know, there's no real adults. So you're just like a kid. You know, in my head, I'm the same person that I was when I was 13, you know, but like I've just learned a lot more shit. I've gone through a lot. I've had a lot more experience.
Got a lot more money.
Yeah, I've got more money than I did when I was 13, for sure. But yeah, it's, yeah. So what's the, like the apprenticeship process, like becoming an iron worker?
So like, I think it's important that like what I'm talking about is for trade unions and apprenticeships only. Like of all the things that are unionized, like there's a lot of similarities. Like for example, like I'm a union iron worker. I belong to Iron Workers Local 392 as a member. So my experience is really limited to just trade unions. I know that like teachers are unionized, a lot of municipalities, like their employees are unionized. There's government unions, like those all things fall under the same umbrella, but like they all function differently. You know what I mean? So my experience is with trade unions alone.
Okay.
I can educate some people on the importance of being unionized and why this is a good thing. But like my experience is exclusive to trades.
Okay.
I actually try to get in, you know, I was working in a shipyard, as a welder and a fabricator from the time I was 18 until I was like 20, probably like 23. Didn't make a lot of money.
What are you doing there?
So I worked in a barge repair yard.
Okay.
So like they're literally bringing barges, like I'm on the river, I'm physically on the water. They're bringing like barges into this repair yard. We're like cutting out stuff that's broken, you know, replacing parts, welding up cracks, stuff like that. Like anything from like welding up a simple 6-inch fracture to like literally cutting the entire front of a barge off and rebuilding it.
Oh, wow.
So like, you know, I was doing a lot of welding, a lot of cutting, a lot of fabricating work, you know, everything you think that goes into it went into it. It's outside all the time and it's on the water. This is important when it's like January.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Yeah. I remember seeing your story one day that was like, yeah, I'm sure that walk into your office, it was like one of the days where it was like 10 below freezing or something. And like, oh, I'm sure that walk into your office was brutal.
I take like a lot of stuff that people like have complaints about. Oh, it's, you know, it's so hot out here. It's so humid. And it's, you know, it's so freezing cold. It's like, yeah.
Let me cover you in leather and put a torch in your hand.
Like, I'm sure it was a little very hotter. Difficult for you today, you know?
Yeah.
So I worked in the shipyard for like 4.5 years from the time I was 18 to probably like almost 23. I didn't make a lot of money. You know, I mean, like I barely scraped by, man. I was taking care of my daughter. And at the time I was with her mom, who was a student like in college, you know? And there was like so many times where I was like, dude, I gotta get out of here. Like, I hate this. I hate this job. You know, like the mental health aspect of like this adjustment of like, I'm 19, dude. You know what I mean? I'm doing this. And like, these are choices that I made. It's important. Like, you know, I own up to that. Like, you know, I had a daughter at 19. Like, that's a choice, dude. So dealing with like the constant stresses of like barely making ends meet was like really weighing on me, man. Like when people talk about the weight of a father, like that's stuff that they're talking about is, you know, if something goes wrong or something breaks down or something needs taken care of, like it was on me to figure it out. And there was so much time that I spent just being like, I got to get the fuck out of here, man. I can't stand this. Like, this is a textbook definition of a dead end job. You know what I mean?
Really?
Despite it being, you know, a trade oriented job, there's no, like there's the window for opportunity is so narrow. And they offered me a spot as a foreman, as a 19-year-old. Like, I've been in like a leadership capacity to some degree, every job I've ever had. It just kind of like comes natural to me to like see what the situation is, figure out the best way to get to the end point and like kind of streamline that. In my ironworking career, I've had amazing examples of that. And I've had amazing people really take me under their wing, like my business partner included, which we'll get to that probably a little bit later. You know, I've been given really good opportunity and learned a lot from other people who are arguably way better at this stuff than me. So I was like getting tired of, you know, the dead end job stuff. They offered me this foreman's position when I was probably 19 or 20. They were like, it'll be on nights and we'll offer you like $1 an hour more. I'm like, are you out of your mind?
Yeah.
Like
all this other responsibility.
All this other responsibility for $40 a week. Yeah. Like, yeah. And this to me was like kind of the moment where I realized where if you want good people to do good things, you got to pay them. You know what I mean? Like, you're telling, like, what that tells me is you value this position for a dollar. Like, as the you know, as the higher up or the manager or whatever, like, the value of this job to you is $1 an hour. I think we're way too far apart to make a deal here today.
You know? Yeah, for sure.
So, fast forward a little bit to 2011. You know, a lot of the people that I worked with who were like also young guys, like in their early 20s and stuff, like had the same gripes. Like, we don't get paid shit. This sucks. Our working conditions are horrible. You know, it's freezing cold. You know,
and you were not in the union at this point.
No, right? No. You know, the working conditions are terrible. It's cold as hell all the time. It's hotter than hell in the summer. You know, like these people ask us to do a lot and give us very little, I felt like. So my dad called me one day. This was 2011. My dad called me one day. He's like, hey, the ironworkers union is taking apprenticeship applicants. And it's like, it's probably a job that like would be a good path forward. It's similar to the work that you're doing now, you know? You know, I know you're talking like that you really hate where you're at. I was going to night school too this whole time.
To do what?
Well, several things. Mm-hmm. At one point I wanted to be a history teacher. And then I realized that like teachers don't get paid jack shit, which is another great example of what do you value? You know what I mean?
Right.
What do you value? There's no reason a teacher should start at $30,000 a year.
I'm married to one of them. I get it.
Yeah, dude. And then I got into some sign language interpreting for a while and I just got super mega burnt out. It's like you have to really jump in beat first 24/7. And it was just like, And honestly, part
it's hard
of it
to do that when everybody around you is just speaking normally. You
exactly.
Have to, like, just
exactly,
go immerse
yeah.
yourself in a bunch of deaf people or.
And then I was interested in some criminal justice stuff. And then I got some better opportunities while I was in school. So I was working full time during the day. And I was going to college at night. And then I was raising my daughter. I had a pretty full boat, man.
And did you finish junior college?
I am a proud community college dropout. I graduated high school with like probably a 2.0 GPA. I dropped out of community college. Now I'm a business owner. You know what I mean,
yeah.
So, I mean, you've taken a non-traditional approach and you're dropping out of college. What was that, 2009?
No, so I went to college till 2012.
Okay. So, you know, that's like the golden era where everybody's like, you got to get your master's, you got to go to college, you got to get a 4-year degree. Looking back, you know, what do you think people get wrong about the success formula that society pushes?
Well, I think in the era that I grew up in, and you guys, you know, you're similar, so you can probably like relate to like growing up. It's like, oh, the path, you know, the culture is that the pathway to success is college.
College, yeah.
That's how you are successful. As you go to college, you get a degree, you know, get into finance, you get into, you know, X, Y, Z, whatever. And speaking from my own perspective, like my job as an iron, even outside of like owning a business, as an iron worker, I love what I do, dude. Yeah. Like we do badass, like Zach sees the picture, yeah, man. Like we do badass stuff.
Yeah.
So like, you know, your whole life, you kind of grow up like, oh yeah, you know, blue collar people are like less than college educated people. Which it's like, well, who do you think builds the school?
Right.
Who do you think builds the hospital that the doctor works in? Who went to medical school? Who do you think builds the Air Force base that, you know,
right. The
military? Where they shoot the rockets
off at. You know, these are things that people never really consider. It's like, it's kind of a lucrative career that you're not really talked about because the standard that we hold college to in this country is different. Like in Europe, like my wife has been to several European countries. And she's like, yeah, when I was in Germany, like they push trade schools the same way they push colleges. It's like, because there's a clear need for people that can like fix and build stuff. So like, why would you not put the same energy into that you put into somebody wanting to go into catastrophic debt to be in a career that most of the time they don't even like? Dude, probably 9 out of 10 people that I know that are college educated hate what they do for a living.
Yes.
Hate it.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, so many people that we know. You know, you go and get that degree, and then what? You know,
exactly.
Like, I mean, that degree that you got that you got. It's like what kind of job are you expecting to go get with that? You know, like I've got a psychology degree. Like what am I going to go do with that?
If you want me to lay on the couch, like put the feet out, we can talk about my problems.
But like I don't even have like the degree to be able to do that. Like I'd have to go to school for another fucking 4 or 5 years or something. You know, like. People just go to college to go to college. And it's like, people want to have that college experience. And like, you know, which essentially means you just want to go fuck off with your friends for 4 years. Cause that's kind of what you want to do. I mean, that's like what you wanted, you know? And like, but like, where is that getting you? You know, really all that I've gotten from college, like, yes, I have a degree, but like, I've never used it. The only thing I've really gotten from college is like the relationships and like the experience of like living on my own. Yeah. You know, like the my friends that I made in college, yeah, I've sold a couple houses from them. But like, other than that, like financially, like what has going to college gotten me other than debt? Like pretty much nothing other than like some of my friends that I've met, you know? And so I totally agree with you here that I think that things are, you know, I think things are starting to turn around though.
Cause yeah,
I don't think that college is being seen as what it once was.
Shit, you're starting to see more and more commercials pushing trade schools.
100%. Yeah. And I would love to talk about that too, man. Cause I've got a lot of opinions about it. You know
I mean? For sure. I'm sure you do. So anyway, you got into the apprenticeship.
So I applied for the apprenticeship in 2011. Applying for the apprenticeship in the ironworkers in my local, again, I can't speak for every trade union out there. For me, it's like, it's a lengthy process. You know, they have an initial sign up where you pay a sign up fee, which is like 20 or 25 bucks. So your name gets put on a list and then you have an orientation meeting, which is a month later. And they're like, the orientation meeting starts at 7 p.m. on, you know, Wednesday the 25th or whatever. At 7 p.m., they lock the door. So, nope, if your name's on the list, you show up at 7:01, you're not eligible anymore. Sit in the orientation meeting, they tell you like, we're iron workers, this is what we do, this is why it's great, this is why you should want to do it. You know, they kind of like pep you up a little bit. Fast forward another month, now you have to take an aptitude test. So, you know, say you signed up in, it's March right now, say you signed up in March, you'll have your initial orientation in April. In May, you'll take your aptitude test, which same thing. Be here at 8 a.m. on Saturday. At 8:01, the door's locked. If you're not there, you're no longer eligible. So they're slowly like weeding down this list. You know what I mean?
People that can't show up on time, shit like that. Yeah.
And the aptitude test, you know, is very basic to say the least. Like, can you know, it's like, you know, they've string out like there's like a picture of a tape measure. And it's like, what, how long is this line? And it's, you know, 8 7/16. And, you know, there's like, it's like very like high school level math, maybe some stuff like, you know, there's like pictures of dump trucks loaded with rocks, like which would fall over first, you know, like stuff like that. And it's been a lot of years, man, but I want to say it was like 100 questions and you had an hour to do it. And I felt like it's designed for you to not complete. So then you take your aptitude test, then you have a personal interview with like an examining board is what they call it. And that's a month after the test. So same thing. You come in on a, you know, a Wednesday night or whatever. They lock the door at 7 o'clock. If you're not there, you're out. So what starts as like a list of maybe 100, 150 people, by the time they get through this 3 month process, is like maybe 75 names, you know, and then they're taking 10 people.
Oh, wow. Wow. That small.
And this is 2000. And there's a shitload of nepotism. And I hope that like that gets out. I hope that like this portion of that conversation, there's a shitload of nepotism in union trades. And it's the thing that pisses me off the most about it is that we pass over really good qualified people because of somebody's nephew, somebody's kid, some like, I want that to be the highlight of this talk is that nepotism in the trades is bullshit. It's bullshit everywhere.
Because it's not about what you know, but who you know. 100%.
100%.
Like you said, passing up good quality workers for someone that feels like they're owed this 100%, instead of earned.
So I did all this in 2011. I didn't know any iron workers, didn't know anybody. You know, you have to do all this stuff, like you do all the interview, the test. You also have to get some documentation, like you have to give your transcripts. You have to get three endorsements from people. They don't really tell you who or who it should be, but your acceptance probably has a lot to do with who signs those three papers.
Okay.
So I do all this shit in 2011. This takes months to do, you know what I mean? Yeah. And they're like,
you're working it.
I'm working for the barge company and I'm going to college and I'm like doing this interviewing process. It takes 3 months to do this. And then after your interview, they're like in 28 to 30 days, you'll receive a letter of either acceptance or denial. 2011, I get a letter of denial. And I was like, as Michael Jordan would say, I took that personally. Because I looked around the room, man. I remember doing my aptitude test. Like I said, man, this is basic math, dude. This is not like complex math. I remember the kid sitting across from me, like sweating bullets, dude. And I'm like getting ready to turn my test in with 10 minutes left. And this kid's on like question 45. I'm like, wow, I think I've got this in the bag based on the aptitude test alone.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I'm fucking way smarter than right, these fuckers. Yeah.
So I get my letter of denial and like, keep in mind, dude, like at this point in my life, like I'm sick of the shit, man. I'm tired of working this job. I'm tired of like not having, dude, I cannot stress this to you enough. Like I'm scraping by every week, dude. When people talk about living paycheck to paycheck, I did it for years. It fucking sucks, dude. I'm sympathetic to people who like just can't seem to get the break that they need, man.
Bro, I totally feel that. I was there. Not that long ago.
I see it on my side of the real estate business with the finance side. Like you're looking at what people are trying to purchase and what they, because I always ask them, I'm like, what's a monthly payment that you would feel comfortable with? And then I get their income docs and I'm like, holy fuck, that monthly payment that you're comfortable with. Now this doesn't always happen, but in some situations I'm like, it's more than half of what you're bringing home.
100%, dude. Like, I lived in an apartment with my daughter and her mom. At the time, $400 a month, and it was like maybe 400 square feet. Like it was small, dude. I the reason that I ended up buying my first house is because one, I wanted to get the hell out of there, and two, I was like, literally, if I bought a spatula, I don't know where the hell I'd put it. You know what I mean? Because I just have like no room. You know what I mean? Like, so I do the whole interview process. I get my letter of denial, and I'm like, again, man, I'm just like, I feel so personal about this. You know what I mean? I don't know. You know, I'm pretty naive to this process. I'm pretty naive to like unions and union trades and stuff like that. I'm like still working full time. I'm still going to college. You know, I was going to college because I'm like, at some point this is going to break. I'm either going to like get my degree and get the hell out of here or like something better is going to happen for me. You know what I mean? You know, you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. So 2012 rolls around and I'm like, you know what, man, I'm doing this again. Fuck this. I'm doing this again. You know what I mean? So I do that
You can only do it once a year?
Yeah. So they only take people in once a year. Mind you, the economy is complete shit right now. At this point in time, like the economy is terrible. Work is really slow. Like as far as construction is concerned, there's not a lot going on. So I'm like still wanting to roll the dice on this thing. I was pissed they didn't take me because I knew I was qualified. I knew that I could like do this every day. And I told them that, you know, in the interview, I gave them like, mostly those like generic answers, like why should we pick you? Oh, because like I'm great and I'm qualified to do this because like I need this opportunity to like better things for myself. You know what I mean? So 2012 rolls around and like the opportunity to apply comes up again And like, it lit a fire on me, dude. I was like, fuck that. Like, I'm doing this. You know what I mean? And I'm going to like, let these people know that they messed up when they didn't pick me the first time. Right. So I do this whole process again. I sign up, I take the applicant fee or pay the applicant fee. Sorry. I do the orientation. I do the aptitude test. I do the personal interview. This all goes over several months again. You know what I mean? And I remember going into my interview like the second time, and it was just like it is right now. I was on one side of the desk, two guys were on the other side of the desk. And I do the same thing. Like when I sat down, I had brought up that I was here last year. I was like, hey, I did this all last year. I'm familiar with this process. I'm familiar with what you guys do. You know, I'm here to like be like, I told you last time I really wanted to do it. And, you know, I'm here again. So like we go through the whole interview, you know, why should we pick you? Are you comfortable working outside? You're gonna be in these like dangerous conditions. I had no idea too that like ironwork was super fucking dangerous when I applied for this job. I was just like, dude, I gotta get a better job. You know what I mean? And they're like, okay, Brian, like, is there anything else that you want to say before we let you go? And I was like, yeah, you know, I kind of brought it up earlier, but you know, I was here last year, a year ago, and I jumped through all these hoops a year ago, and I told you guys before that I was the best candidate for this job. I told you guys a year ago that like I was willing to do whatever it took to like be the best at this. I was like, I'm here again a year later to remind you of the same thing, that there is no person in this pool of people that are more qualified and willing to do more for this job than me. I was like, it's important that you both know that. And I remember the dude sitting across me just like gave like this really like subtle nod with like a slight grin, and I left out of there. And I was like, kind of thinking to myself, you know, if it doesn't work out again, like that's probably it. I'm not going to do this again. I was like, but I put all the cards on the table, dude. I was like, honest as hell. I was like, not going to leave any stone unturned here. I kind of let them know that I was like, kind of pissed they didn't take me before. And I'm happy that they know that now. Fast forward like a month, I got my letter of acceptance.
Fuck yeah.
That's awesome. I was like, dude, it was like one of the happiest. I get like emotional thinking about it right now just because it's like, it was like this crushing weight that like had come off me. I was like, dude, things are finally going to like start looking up. And I also knew, I was like, it's going to be a ton of fucking work because like, I don't have, you know, the dad, the uncle, the grandfather, I don't have anybody to fall back on. I've got to make my own reputation. I've got to do all this on my own. Like I got to make a name on my own. And that's what I did, man. I went out there and I fucking worked hard. I knew going, like when I got the first job call, cause like in,
so how does it work?
Then so like in a union, in a trade union, like you have a hiring, they call it a hiring hall. So like say you're a contractor, you're going to put up a building like this building, which is a dope ass building, by the way. If nobody's seen this, this place is rad as hell. Yeah, you know, you're like, hey, I'm Joe X. I want to put up a building. You know, this company's going to be contracted to do it. I need iron workers to man this job, to set the steel, weld stuff down, whatever, you know, do the rebar, concrete reinforcement, whatever. So the contractor will call the union hall, say, hey, I need five iron workers to come and do this job. It's probably going to last, you know, obviously depending upon the scope of the project, sure. You know, it's going to last a month, 2 months, whatever. The hiring hall goes through a hiring list, the people that are off of work. They do the project comes to an end. Typically speaking, like those guys all get laid off because the project's over with. They'll go back to the hiring hall, sign back up on the no work list. And this process will repeat itself. Sometimes it happens to where, like the goal of a contractor, particularly in leadership, is to like keep the same guys on. So like say I hire you two guys, you're both foremen for whatever, you know, you run one crew, you run a different crew. We have several jobs going on. Since you guys are good leaders and you know the scope of work really well, I can trust you. You guys like handle business. Like I want to keep you on. So to do that, I need to have enough work to keep you busy. You know what I mean? Hired help a lot of times, like you just have to go to the hall. You know what I mean? But it's pretty common for most contractors to have a steady 40-hour guys that are foremen. But the same thing, like they're still union iron workers. They still did a union apprenticeship. Generally speaking, there are some ways to sneak around that some contractors will do that's like kind of shady, and it's kind of frowned upon, but
like what,
like they'll go to, so like me, like I did a 4-year union apprenticeship. I'm a union iron worker who did an apprenticeship with Iron Workers Local 392. I'm a card carrying member of Iron Workers Local 392 in the South, where there's like a lot of right to work legislation and stuff like that. sometimes union halls will like sell guys membership is the short answer. Like without getting into like super technical stuff, that's like, you know, the short answer is like you can buy a union membership here. And since you technically are a card carrying member and I'm a union contractor, I can hire you. And that happens, and it's really frowned upon, and it's a fast way to like lose respect of your people.
Well, I was going to say, after the process that you went through, I'd be kind of pissed off about that.
Yeah. They call them bought books. Most guys in the field will call them bought book bag lickers. You can paint a picture for yourself. Sure. But you know, sorry, grandma, I don't want my, like, you know what I mean? Those guys, like, they don't really hold the respect that people that earn it do. And the guys most of the time will let you know that. I did my apprenticeship and I never looked back. I did my first, so you do school, it's apprenticeship training is what it is. We call it school.
That's about 4 years, right?
It's a 4 year, my local is a 4 year apprenticeship. So you have to go to school. In my local, we go twice a year. We go for 2 weeks at a time. Typically it'd be like 2 weeks in the fall, 2 weeks in the spring. But that whole time in between,
you're working.
Yeah. So like,
you're learning on the job.
100%.
Older guys,
there's only so much that I can teach you in a classroom.
Right.
This is pretty hands-on shit here. You know what I mean? Yeah. I can get, like, a lot of it is cert training. Like all my guys and really everybody in my local, like all those guys are OSHA certified, whether it be OSHA 10 or OSHA 30. There's rigging certifications. There's welding certs that we have and stuff like that. Like, that's really what school is geared towards, is like getting your certifications and like being current on stuff. And that whole time in between school, you're working. Hopefully you're working. You know, sometimes you hit slow points. The weather's bad. The economy's bad, whatever. Like, those are all things that are dynamic to working. But, you know, the goal is to stay busy. You know, you do your 4 years and then you finish the program.
Yeah, I mean, I work with I've helped a lot of union workers purchase homes. And, you know, some of them, there's a few on the contracting side that you see that they'll get in and they'll be with the same company for multiple years. Is it something similar with Ironworks, or is it more contract-based where you're moving job to job to job? I mean, you see it a lot, like electricians, especially, like we'll see them bounce more frequently from job to job to job. Makes for a fun process when it comes to calculating income on my end, but I enjoy it. Those are the ones that are enjoyable for me to work with. But is that similar to Ironworks, or is that,
yeah, I mean,
is,
yeah,
that just unions as a whole?
Yes to both, I would say, because like those are true on both fronts. Cause like, it's kind of an experience, like you're going to get out of what you put into it. You know what I mean? Like, I can choose to just like hop around. If like, you know, I don't like the way somebody's doing business, I can be like, I'm out of here, you know, go back and sign up at the hall or whatever. But then there's also people that like make a point to stick with the same contractor. I always made a point to stick with the same contractor. It didn't work out most of my career that way, but like later on it did. So getting established is difficult, you know, because again, like you're making a reputation for yourself. There's a lot of nepotism. So a lot of these like small towns where everybody's an iron worker, everybody knows each other, you know, you want to take care of whoever's nephew and keep the small town politics straight. Like, I didn't play any of that shit. I'm here to work. I'm here to make money. And I learned pretty quick that my dynamic on a job site was either a guy that you really liked and I was great to have around, or I was a guy that you really didn't like. So there was really no in between for me. And honestly, I worked the most with people who had the same vibe. Yeah. Same mentality.
Is that why you went and started your own company?
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of the motivating factor. When I I have partners, so it's not just me. It's not like I like dreamt this up and like did all this on my own. I have two partners who 100% deserve the same amount of credit, if not more, you know, because they play a tremendous role in everything that goes on. If you can imagine, starting a commercial construction company is like not an easy task. It's not like a small order. You know what I mean?
You do this in 21.
Yeah. Yeah. So my
right in the heart of COVID.
Yeah. How did this all come about, man?
2021 was an insane year of my life. I have two business partners. I have Chris, who is also a union iron worker. And then I have Max, who is honestly a childhood friend of mine. He's my best friend's older brother. I've known Max my whole life. I love Max to death. Max is not a DIY, not a handy, not a construction oriented guy. You know what I mean?
Okay.
He's the white collar to your guys' blue collar.
He is a business savvy individual, though.
Got it. Okay.
Chris, my partner Chris is a guy who I got a job with as an apprentice and was like another turning point in my career. You know what I mean? Chris was another guy who like did it on his own, earned every inch, did it on his terms, did it his way. Like Chris is one of the most, I struggle to find a word to describe it because the dude is just like on a different level. I mean, he's like, you know, we were talking about ball when I sat down, Pat, and you're talking about like the levels of playing baseball. I was like, Chris was like a major leaguer compared to a fucking high school baller, dude. I mean, he's a person that is just like, you can pitch any part of construction to, and he will like come up with an answer, come up with a solution, find ways to do it. Chris kind of like really groomed me to be, one, really good at my job, and two, to be a leader in it. I was a third year apprentice working for Chris, got a job out of the hall, never knew Chris, never met him before, just like showed up and was a guy that like worked hard. And I think Chris liked that. And then fast forward, there was like an opportunity for a foreman job. And Chris gave that job to me as an apprentice, which is not well accepted most of the time. And they basically, like, there was kind of a fit with some guys on a job site. I was in charge of running those guys. I went to Chris and I was like, hey man, you know, these guys are like not really following the protocol. And he was like, okay, well, we'll handle that. I had like a powwow and Chris is like, listen, Brian's the foreman out here now. You guys have a lot to say when I'm not here about it. If anybody has anything to say about it, we can talk about it right now. Other than that, get your shit and get to work. If he tells you to do something, go do it. I was like, damn. Like, and then you get like this other level of respect. And like, mind you, I don't really know Chris that well here. Like, you get another level of respect for people, like, have your back. Mm-hmm. Like, in a moment where, like, I don't have the answer to every problem here. This is, like, a brand new experience for me. I'm figuring a lot of this shit out as I go. And Chris was like, hey, man, do you have any other problems? Have any questions? Like, let me know. Like, we'll figure it out. And, like, really, really took me under his wing, man. And I think really just because, like, I worked hard and had a good attitude. So, like, I tell Chris a lot. Like, if we have, like, kind of like a, you know, a heart to heart, I guess what you'd call it, but like moments where I'm like, dude, I really appreciate some of the shit you did for me. Like, I'll tell him all the time, like, dude, I'm a really good iron worker because of like a lot of shit that you showed me. So Chris and I worked together for, you know, on and off for like a lot of years.
So like you guys just kind of got like paired up on jobs.
He was my, iron worker superintendent.
Okay.
I got a job out of the hall to go actually rehab, the Eads Bridge.
Oh, cool.
Okay.
Yeah. So I did like, all the rehab work on that. I did that. Like not just me, there's like a shitload of iron workers out there, but so I did the rehab work on that, like all the support structure that the Metrolink like track is on, like we put all that in, we built all that stuff.
Are you like hanging from things
frequently? Yeah. we do a lot of stuff up high, stuff over water. We do you know, nobody wants to watch a carpenter work because that shit's lame. Yeah. But like, if you see guys climbing a steel structure downtown, you're gonna be like, "Oh my gosh, what are they doing?"
Those are crazy bastards.
Yeah, there's definitely, you know, a psychological aspect of iron work, I think.
Yeah.
And it was another thing that was like, you know, obviously heights don't bother me. Being up high doesn't bother me. We do a lot of really dangerous shit. We do a lot of really sketchy stuff. But I remember the first time I had to like be up high. I had to have like an internal like conversation with myself. Like, all right, man, like this is an opportunity to like get better.
Yeah.
Like this is an opportunity to like, this is for the money. You know what I mean? Like, just get up there and do it. You know what I mean? And like, you know, that was, I don't know, over a decade ago. And now it's just, you know,
now it's just fucking every day. It's a Tuesday.
Yeah. Yeah. You'd be up, you know, 400 plus feet sometimes. And you're like, wow, everybody looks like tiny ants from down here. Yeah. Highest I've ever been. This is at, the Phillips 66 refinery in Wood River. I was 416 feet, and I had like, I was hanging rigging for like, we were going to pull these big ass like steel plates up, and I had to like kind of climb out onto the structure, and I had like a 10 inch fume pipe. And that was like all I really had to walk on was the 10 inch pipe.
So, hands are sweating just thinking about this, dude.
You know, it's not for everybody. And it's like this cool thing where people, you know, you talk about iron work and people like to hear about it. And I like to talk about it, man. I'm like, it's a badass job. people seem to think that like part, like the job is just to go high and then you just like, that's it. You hang out. Just
hang out up there.
Like, no, dude, we're swinging sledgehammers. We're, you know, we're welding brackets in. We're driving pins. We're sticking bolts. We're like using heavy pneumatic tools. Like, it doesn't just stop when you get up there.
Yeah, that's when the work begins. Yeah. That's just where the work happens is you have to get up there to do it.
It's not for everybody. We do, you know, like I said, Pat, I post a fair amount of ironwork material on social media, like Zach sees some of it, and I get a lot of reaction faces from Zach.
So. So he's got you got pictures on there of you hanging from buildings and stuff like that.
We do my River City Ironwork. We do, you know, we do a lot of bridge work, so just like everybody's favorite stuff. It's also probably like some of the, it's either your favorite stuff or it's the stuff you desire the least.
Why would it be your favorite stuff?
Man, it's unique. Like the a lot of the bridges I work on are super old. You know, a lot of that stuff is still held together with rivets, which really haven't been a thing since like the 50s.
Okay.
Like I did, like I said, Chris and I, when we worked together, years ago, we rehabbed the Eads Bridge. It was built in 1874.
Right. It's like the oldest bridge in St. Louis, right?
It's like the oldest bridge. Oldest river crossing bridge in the world, I think.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. There was something significant about Eads.
You know, and then you nerd out. Like I'm kind of like a dork for like architecture and old buildings and stuff. Then you kind of like nerd out about the stuff you do. Like, we service the MacArthur Bridge, which is a railroad bridge. It's just, so if you go over Poplar Street, the Poplar Street Bridge, just south, like the big arch bridge right there, that's the MacArthur Bridge. So if you see guys climbing on that, like, that's us.
Okay.
and it was built in 1911. Yeah. And, like, same thing. Like, I've got some steel in my basement that has a Carnegie stamp on it.
Really?
That's pretty cool.
Like, Carnegie steel hasn't been around for 100 years. You know?
Yeah, that's
like,
cool.
Became U.S. Steel. That's what my dad worked for. He was Granite City, then U.S. Steel. So, yeah, I think, was it Carnegie that became U.S. Steel?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, but damn, that's fucking cool.
It's cool, man. I mean, we do some cool shit, and like I say frequently, man, I love what I do. I love being an iron worker.
Yeah, well, it's like, I mean, like you said, it's one of the most dangerous jobs in, like, I think you said in your thing, is like top five most dangerous jobs or something, right?
Frequently ranked like in the top five. Structural steel work is.
Have you ever like had any like crazy close calls or like, I'm sure you've probably had some.
Well, you're harnessed in, obviously, or no?
Sure, Pat.
Well,
me, my guys, like, we're OSHA compliant. So like, yes, we are harnessed in. Does that mean that like I have not had accidents or close calls or been on jobs where there have been accidents? Those things do occur.
Yeah.
I brushed my ring fingertip in 2016. I was in a man basket going up on a bridge, had my hand on the handrail, and like we had to really like kind of work our way up between the bridge girders. And you know, when you have a 80-foot boom, you gotta like all the way boomed out, like there's a lot of play, you know, in something that's that tall. And got pinched between the girder and the handrail and crushed my fingertip. It was like it was not fun. It was very undesirable.
And
thankfully it was, you know, it's fine now. I instantly knew that this was not good. I remember taking leather gloves. Yeah. I took my leather glove off, and like when I did this, like just blood came all over the ground from my fingertip. It was still fairly intact. It hurt like hell.
Yeah.
Went to the hospital or urgent care. They, numbed the finger with a nerve blocker, ripped the fingernail off, cauterized underneath the fingernail, stitched the fingernail back on, had a longitudinal break up to the first knuckle, didn't require any surgery or anything like that. It was like a mostly okay injury. But
so is that the worst injury?
I herniated a disc in my back in 2016.
That's a big one.
I can't prove directly that it happened at work, but I'm about 99% sure it happened at work. Yeah, I herniated a disc in my back. I was out of work for like 10 to 12 weeks. Had a lot of really, really, really bad nerve pain. They wanted me to, I did those injections, you know, which thankfully they worked out. Yeah, they were talking about seeing a surgeon to have the disc shaved down. Yeah, and
my mother-in-law just had that done like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I was 20, you know, 25, 26, around there. I literally told the nurse practitioner, I was like, listen, I'm not even 30, like remove back surgery as an option. Like, I don't care what it takes, take time off, stretch, whatever, like like remove that as an option because we're just not going to do that. So other than that, I've been thankful. You know, construction is a dangerous job and not everybody comes out unscathed all the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Jobs where people have been killed. Jobs where people have died. Jobs where people have been pretty fucked up. You have to accept it as
possibility.
The possibility. So, like, how do you prevent those things? Like, be compliant, be safe. If something doesn't look right, speak up about it. You know, if something needs corrected, correct it. You know, there's so many, like, every time somebody I think gets hurt, it's very, very, very rare that it's like just a freak accident. You know what I mean? A freak accident is like when you're walking down the street and a slab of concrete falls on you. Like, that's a freak accident. Mm-hmm. Those things do occur in construction. But like most of the time, it's because something is not right to begin with. We did the Eads Bridge job in 2016, July. They had a guy that got killed on that job. It wasn't an iron worker, and I don't want to like talk a lot about it because I don't really want to like speak ill of like, you know, the people that are not with us any longer. But they had a painter that got killed, a towboat. We were working off of what they call safe span, which is suspended scaffolding underneath the bridge. It like kind of has like a U shape to it, and they were sandblasting, and a boat collided with the safe span that he was on, killed him. Yeah, so we were there for that. Nice. And it like creates just like, you know,
what does that do to you mentally? Well, like that?
Pat, at the time, the guy that got killed was the same age as me and had a daughter that was a year younger than mine. So for me in particular, it was something that I had a really hard time dealing with. Given he wasn't an iron worker, but like, I'm like, well, at least it's not like somebody that I know. So now I have to hear about this all the time. But, you know, this is still somebody that like went to work, kissed his wife or girlfriend or whatever by and like didn't come home. Like, it's not just exclusive to iron work. Like, construction trades as a whole are fucking dangerous, you know? And it gets undercut a lot, I think. Like, this used to set me off so much, man, when people, like, badmouth blue-collar people and, you know, talk about how, like, we're dumb construction workers and shit like that. And it's like, okay, like, this guy didn't go home because of literally, like, this is one of those few instances where, like, this is not his fault. This is a freak accident, you know.
Because he was fixing a bridge so other people can go home.
Could go home, yeah. And then a tugboat runs into it. You know? Yeah. So... that happened on, it was July 16th, 2015, either the 16th or the 15th. I want to say it was a Thursday. I remember going home, like, could not stop thinking about it.
Oh, could not.
I mean, I tried everything I could, like watch a movie, go for a walk, whatever. Could not stop thinking about it. And they had OSHA come in. OSHA does like a big investigation. You know what I mean? Essentially finds the line haul boat at fault. The river stage was really high. They shouldn't have gone under the bridge, et cetera, et cetera. You know, I didn't dive into it a lot after that, mm-hmm. just because it's like kind of taxing, but it's 10 years later. I still think about it. And then I did a job when work gets slow, guys will do what they call booming out, where like, say there'll be like a really big project somewhere. Like I went to Southeast Iowa in 2014 to work on a fertilizer plant. It took like 7,000 construction workers to do.
Oh shit.
So like it's
a big job,
a project of that size. Like, the local unions can't man that job. Like, we literally don't have enough members to, if we stopped every construction project in our jurisdiction and put everybody we have on it, we still wouldn't have enough people to man this job. So they'll do what's called, they'll have like a call list. And so guys will travel there and stay there, work on the job. And I was on a job there where a guy had a heart attack and died. But like, same thing, like, this isn't an accident. This isn't really job related, but like, you're on the job with this person, and like, it's the same thing.
You got to meet them. You may,
yeah, like your paths cross. Yeah, like, yeah. This person to some capacity influenced your day to some degree, mm-hmm. and like, same thing. Like, the guy left the house thinking he's going to come home, doesn't come home, and like, especially with me being out of town, I'm like surrounded by the same thing. Like, we're all from out of town here. There's so many construction workers on this job. Like, we're all from out of town, you know, and it's just like, man, like, it takes you like step back from it. And you're like, wow, like. Tomorrow could be the last day. This could be the last project I ever work on. You know what I mean? And you've had some, you know, I've had close calls. Thankfully, like, the finger crush was like probably the worst thing, but not everybody's lucky, man. And like, there's a cost to things being, you know, forward progress has a cost sometimes.
Yeah. Bro.
So like, I will go to great lengths to defend blue collar work and blue collar people.
Yeah. Well, fuck, we wouldn't have what we have in this world if it wasn't.
Especially union people, man. We have way more safety qualifications and certifications. Union job sites are way safer.
It's a yin and a yang between blue and white. You have to have one for the other.
Yeah. And like I said earlier, like, who do you think builds the hospitals? Right. You went to med school. I mean, that's great. That's awesome. It's awesome that you are a doctor and you help people, but like, blue collar people built the hospital, man. Yeah.
Right. Wouldn't be there.
Yeah. So yeah, that's been it for me as far as like extremes and like, as far as injuries and fatalities, but they do happen.
So how did River City Ironwork come about?
Oh, so we were talking about Chris earlier. Yeah. Chris is like my, you know, Chris was the guy that like really took me under his wing and man, just showed me so much, man. The dude is, he's such a good dude. I mean, I could spend 90 minutes talking, you know, about, you know, given the length of this podcast, you know, I could spend the next 2 hours talking about how much Chris has showed me and taught me and probably inconvenienced himself in situations so that I could learn something. You know what I mean? He's just a guy that I'm just like, I'm, you know, I've known him for 10 plus years now and I'm just still like, dude, how do you do that? You know, he just like, he's a guy that knows everything and he wants to do everything. Like, he very much so. And I think I kind of picked this up from Chris. He's a leader that like very much wants to be in the trench with the guys, have his hands on stuff, wants to like be there with his people. Mm-hmm. And there have been numerous times through my career where I'd be like, dude, I'm just not understanding this. This isn't going the way I thought it would go. And Chris is like, okay, let me come show you. Like, let's do it together. Like, this has happened a million times, dude. And it's just like the caliber of leader that he's been to me specifically. He's like another guy where I think people either really like him or really hate him. There's a lot of people in our line of work that like think Chris is like a super asshole or whatever. And that's fine. Think that. I don't care. Chris doesn't care either. He'll tell you he doesn't care. He'll be like, yeah, like, I think he's an asshole. I don't give a shit. Like, here I am still working. I'm still, you know, we talk about pension credits in our line of work. And Chris is like, I'm getting pension credits every year. Like, you know, how much money did you make last year kind of thing? Yeah. Those guys that talk shit are typically not in your league. You know what I mean?
Right.
Actually, I just read Adam Arberger's book.
Oh, yeah.
You're the fucking problem,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Shout out Tag Team and Adam Arberger, man. Adam
yeah,
is
I love
a,
those guys.
Adam is a...
That was a fun interview when we had him on.
Adam is a different level of human being. I don't know Adam very well personally. Like, our paths have crossed. We have met. We've shaken, you know, shook hands a few times. But Adam is a different level of human, man.
All the shit that he does. Holy cow.
Oh, my gosh. I know. Anyway, so I read his book. I literally finished his book last night. And one of the chapters in his book that I connected with the most was one on hate. Like, people are going to hate on you, dude. People will hate on you. And he told, the best line is that hate always goes upward. People that hate on you, they hate on you because they're not on your level.
Yes.
Nobody in your league is going to hate on you.
No, people don't hate down.
Yeah. Player haters are always looking up, dude. Yeah. Yes. And that, like, reading that was validating as fuck. So Adam, man, is...
He's so wise.
I would love to sit down with Adam and just pick his brain a little bit, dude.
That was one of my favorite podcasts we've done.
Yeah, that was a good episode. Yeah. Adam is a different level of human being. Anyway, so Chris and I worked for a company called St. Louis Bridge, who serviced the client that we service right now, which for like work competitive reasons, I'm not going to disclose here. Not a big deal, but like, you got to kind of protect what you have. You know what I mean? And we did service work for them for like a couple of years under working for St. Louis Bridge. So much so that like, so we talked about unions before and how like it's a different level of talent and skill and training. For 30 years, this client had a non-union contractor coming in and doing their steel repairs and doing maintenance work on their steel structures for like 30 years, literally since like 1992 or 93. We come in 2019, we work there from like March to October. From March to October, we have a log of all the repair work that we did. What we did from March to October, the previous contractor, it took them 4 years to do what we did in roughly 9 months.
Wow.
So the leadership at their office was like,
that's going to save us a ton of fucking
money. How come we haven't been hiring these guys for the last 30 years?
Yeah.
Why have we only gotten this much out of the previous contractor? So that kind of got the wheel turning. So we did this service contract with them for another year. And then they start hiring more union people. You know, they're unionized. It's the railroad, so they're unionized. And they're like, you know, now they have, union fence contractors coming in. They've got, you know, all these other union trades are coming into like their service work. And like, that's what it is. It's like, it kind of just ripples a little bit. You know, I'm a firm believer, and I really learned this from Chris. Let your work speak for itself. You shouldn't have to say a fucking thing about what you do.
No,
like,
let
your work speak.
Is it more expensive to hire a union? Is that why they went non-union, or?
The short answer to that, Pat, is yeah. Like,
and that just answers yourself, because it's the quality of work.
Exactly.
But like, when you start taking it out over a longer period of time, you're actually saving money.
The research and the math would tell you that hiring a union contractor will actually save you money long term, because the productivity, you know, like, think quality. About just the yeah, safety quality. Training alone. Like, right. So yeah, we have to pay for safety training. Like, my guys have to have certain qualifications to do the work that we do. It costs money. It's, you know, it's like not cheap, but like, how much more expensive is it if somebody dies on your job site?
Right.
Okay. Now you're talking about a wrongful death lawsuit. Now you're talking about lost time because OSHA has to come here and shut your job site down to do an investigation. These things compound very quickly. It gets expensive fast, man. I will die on the union hill, no doubt, particularly in the trades. So we do the service work for this client for a couple of years, and then St. Louis Bridge, like the board, are all going to retire. I don't really know. Well, I do know, but I'm not going to disclose a lot of it here. What occurred between that time and River City Ironwork being born. But there was like weird things going on between the chatter out and about, you know? So Chris randomly, you know, we stay in contact all the time. You know, where it was like, hey, who are you working for?
Yeah.
You know, because things get slow. You know, you go work somewhere else. You know what I mean? Which kind of happens a fair amount, like we talked about earlier. Chris is like, you know, hey, I put a bid in on this work, and I got awarded it already. Like, I've got an LLC. I had some things in the works. It didn't work out. Now I don't know what to do, and I've been awarded this contract already. Uh-huh. And I'm like, I will never forget the conversation. I was like, so like, what do you mean you have this contract? Right? He's like, yeah, I have been awarded the contract for this work. I have an LLC that I started. I've been keeping this all under wraps again, 'cause you have to like protect your work a little bit. I was like, dude, do you have like equipment or payroll set up or anything? His exact words were, I don't have a fucking thing yet. He's like, okay, when do they want you to like start? He's like, in a month. I'm like, okay, what are you talking to me about this for? Like, I don't know what to do. You know what I mean? He's like, well, I don't know what to do either. What do you think, man? I'm like, so I kind of like,
so this is like, you're the guy who's kind of showed you everything. You kind of,
yeah, yeah.
Coming you know, the vulnerable point. Honest, where he's like, bro, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing now. You know?
And to be honest with you, I really don't. I don't know if Chris is, and I've never asked him this, and I will tomorrow when I see that dude. I don't know if his point of the conversation was to be like, hey, I want to bring you in on this, or like maybe he just wanted some validation, you know what I mean? Yeah. Of like, I don't know what to do. And then you want me to be like, I also don't know what to do.
Yeah.
No. So I'm like, all right, like the work that we do is fucking great, dude. It's bridge repair and maintenance. Like, I love it. It's my favorite stuff to do. I'm like, well, the motivating factor here for me to do something rather than nothing here is like, I want to keep doing this work for this client. You know what I mean? So like, I kind of like stewed on it for a little while. Like, by a little while, I mean like literally like 2 hours, because they want us there in a month.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hey man, I've got like this, like a friend of mine who's pretty business savvy. You know, he works in the business world for, you know, again, giving you the short answer. Mm-hmm. Let me like see what he thinks, you know, like what he says to do here. I had no idea it was going to turn into a sit down 3-person business meeting. I did not know that was what was going to occur. So I call Max and I'm like, hey man, like I just have this, like this opportunity that I don't really know what to do with. What do you think? You know, and I don't really give him like a sales pitch meeting, but I'm like, this is what we do. This is like how we do it. This is what it requires. Yeah, I really don't know what to do with this information, but like, this is it. Like, if you can like steer this in some direction, do that. And he's like, all right, let me like digest this a little bit and I'll reach out to you tomorrow. We'll talk tomorrow. Okay, cool. And then this becomes the sales pitch meeting.
Okay.
Where he's like, hey, these numbers look good. you know, these numbers look good. So like, what do you want to do with this? I'm like, well, a friend of mine like has this opportunity, like this is locked in and like, we need to get this thing moving forward, I guess. And he's like, all right, I'll do it. But like, you have to be a part of it. Like, okay. Like I can do that. Like I know about this line of work and like this business, like I've been in leadership roles, but like, maybe the three of us should talk together, you know? Yeah. And he's like, yeah. So like, I put him in contact with Chris. Everybody starts kind of chatting. And Chris is like, yeah, they want us there by, you know, the end of the month, which is like at this point, a little bit over 3 weeks away. He's like, Max is like, all right, well, like, you know, we need to get some things together. He's like, I'm in this, but like, it'll be some shared ownership type situation. Like Brian needs to be involved. I don't really know you. So like, we need to like remedy that a little bit. Had like this big Saturday morning, 2-hour phone call. And Max is like, all right, I'm in. Like, what's it going to take? And we like really start getting the ball rolling, like figuring out like how we're going to get all this stuff together. Like, I need a shitload of equipment, dude. Like, you can't just go to Home Depot and buy the stuff that we need. You know what I mean? Like, I need specialized trucks. I need air compressors, all this stuff. And Max is like, yeah, we'll figure it out, man. Like, let's see what like the insurance stuff is going to take. Let's like, through process of elimination, basically like see if we can still pull this off. And like, we kind of start getting down to the wire. Like, we're getting insurance in place. Like, I'm getting a lot of the safety protocol stuff, safety program in place, like a lot of railroad compliance stuff, which working for the railroad is like a whole nother level of, you know, construction. There's a lot of things that you have to have in place to be able to work for a rail, be a contractor to a railroad. And it starts getting like really close to the wire, and like things for me aren't really coming together. Like, I'm just like, I think we're cutting it too close, man. We still, you know, we're like 2 weeks away and we're still like in the figure it out phase of like insurance and payroll and all this other shit. And I remember texting Max, and this is like a moment, like a historical moment for me. I remember texting Max and being like, hey man, if you don't think we can pull this off, it's like, it's not going to hurt my feelings. Okay. Like, I get it. Like, this is a humongous task that we have to do in like this time frame. It's like, I think it's going to take like a large financial commitment. And like, that's a pretty tall order to ask somebody. You know what I mean? I will fucking never forget what Max told me. He's like, hey man, don't worry about the financial aspect of this. We're just going to figure this shit out. Like, damn. 2 weeks later, we were around four employees, all the equipment we needed.
Damn. So you guys
made it work.
Made it work, man. And I like that like 3.5 weeks is like the quintessential example of like the make break moments that you have in your life. Where, like, you know, when you hear all these like, you know, you hear like athletes talk about it, you hear about like super successful business people, like they talk about like these moments where like this is where like it either goes north or south. We had a lot of those moments, 3.5 weeks. And man, we all three of us, man, like really worked our asses off to get this thing in place. We ended up buying a lot of equipment from a previous employer, St. Louis Bridge.
Yeah.
And it's only grown, dude. It's only gotten better.
Yeah.
We've outshined every year.
How many employees are you up to now?
So Chris and I are still in the field every day. And then I've got four other guys on payroll. You know, I don't want it to all just be like, oh, this is Brian and his business. Like, my partners, dude, play a gigantic role in this, man. I cannot, like I said, there's not enough time here in this podcast to talk about all the partners have done for me.
That's awesome.
Wow. Dude, it's amazing.
You guys hear me okay?
Yeah. You're just at the last second away. There.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Move up a little bit.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. That's like, give me goosebumps. Like, yeah. Fucking awesome, dude. Just making it happen, figuring out a way, and
dude, it's been a
trip, awesome. Man. These are awesome stories. Like, just an awesome story.
Yeah, it happened very ironically too, because
this was 2021.
Right? Yeah. So okay. Like, literally, like maybe 2 months before that, I was talking to my wife, who at the time was my girlfriend. I was like, you know, I want to take like a big step. You know, like maybe I should go back to college and like get an engineering degree and like apply my stuff I know about construction, like that'll have some like backwards compatibility type stuff. And I was really trying to like navigate, you know, I wanted to do more. I wanted more, you know. I was like, at the time, like I said, she was my girlfriend at the time. I was like feeling really motivated to be like, you know, people inspire you, man. I was like, when I started dating my wife, I was very inspired. Like, she inspired me so much, man. She's my wife's a physical therapist. She has her doctorate. She's the smartest person I've ever met. She's about 1,000 times cooler than me for sure. I was like really inspired by her and like hearing, like getting introduced to things from her that I had like never really experienced. Just like meeting people that were, you know, very educated or, you know, just kind of like seeing life differently. I was like really motivated by her. And I was like having this conversation about how I wanted to do more. Like maybe I should go back to school. Maybe I should try to take on like a different level of leadership at work, you know, stuff like that. And she was like, well, why don't you ask Chris? Cause like, he's a person that you've worked under for a really long time. And, you know, 2 months later,
Chris has opened up a business
together. And yeah, I remember my wife too saying something to the effect of like, well, here's your big step.
You know what I mean? Yeah. You kind of fell in your lap.
Yeah, man. I mean, opportunity is time and place for sure. And a lot of hard work. You know, I think that if I was just some regular guy, I think Chris probably wouldn't have reached out.
He's clearly had a connection. He respected you for your work ethic. And
Chris is just a person that can just, man, he just do it all, man. He's like a superhuman iron worker.
Damn, dude.
That's awesome, man.
It's crazy, man.
2021 was a wild year, dude. We started a business. We remodeled a house, sold a house, bought a house, planned a wedding, got married, went on a honeymoon. 2021 was a wild fucking year, dude.
Damn.
Yeah, I was living in Swansea. And like,
this is all like middle of COVID, or, you know, kind of like tail end of COVID.
Oh my God, it was crazy.
Middle of COVID, kind of, yeah.
My wife really helped me. We remodeled. I had bought my first house in 2014 and remodeled it to flip it with the intention of like, I want to move to St. Louis. I fell in love with the city, dude. When I was dating my wife, she lived in the Central West End at the time. Excuse me. I'm glad we got that on air. My wife lived in the Central West End at the time, and my introduction to St. Louis started in the Central West End.
Okay. That's a sweet area.
I still, to this day, love the Central West End.
Dude, it's so cool. I got a listing over there right now.
Yeah.
Forest Park over there, just everything. It's just awesome.
So living in Illinois, you know, what you know about the city is like Busch Stadium, the brewery, you know, the zoo. Like, that's the shit that you know.
Yeah.
Right.
Downtown.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think people realize, like, there's, like, three parts to St. Louis City. Like the downtown areas. You got downtown, then you've got like where SLU is and that area, and then you have the Central West End, and then you got South City, all that stuff.
But, dude, the Central West End is like the cherry on top of St. Louis for me to this day. Yeah. Me and my wife had our first date in Central West End. She had a pretty sweet apartment in Central West End. I got to spend a lot of time down there just like walking to places, man. And yeah, you know, just like the vibe in Central West End is awesome.
It's very walkable. There's like all these like cool shops and restaurants and like coffee shops. And it's just like also like a lot of like walkable parts of the city.
Bro, Mission Taco.
Yeah.
Was down there. It's not there anymore.
Yeah, not anymore.
Well,
yeah.
What is it now? It's not Mission Session. Taco. Session Taco. Session. Yeah, yes. You can't say Mission Taco anymore.
Right. I forgot about that.
Gogas.
Because of the tortillas. Yeah.
It'll always be Mission Taco in my
for
heart.
For sure. Man. It's Mission Taco.
Just like Riverport. Yeah. It's always going to be Riverport.
Yeah, right. Is it now River City Casino?
Hollywood Casino.
Yeah.
Lame.
Yeah.
It's called the amphitheater.
So yeah, I fell in love with the city, man. I was like, dude, I got to live here. There's no way I cannot live here. And my wife being from here, was also like, I don't have much interest in living in Illinois.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, I don't blame you. No offense. So yeah, we remodeled my house in Swansea, listed it, sold it. We got to experience the COVID housing market.
There you go.
We looked at 74 houses.
Holy shit, we made
9 offers, and we ended up in Richmond Heights, which I love.
Yeah. Oh, it's great.
Get the best
great
of both location. Worlds.
Dude, I love
74 it. Showings.
Holy yeah, 74. My poor real estate
agent.
Yeah,
I was going to say, your poor agent. Man.
It was a family friend. It was a friend of my aunt.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Who was very patient with us.
That's more than I've ever shown anybody.
Dude,
so yeah.
Well, next, reference this next time you have like a client that's like, I want to look at 40 houses. Be like, well, I knew a dude that looked at 74.
Yeah. I think the most I have is 53. And that was, that was a doozy.
That commission check feels different. You know what I mean?
Well, she ended 53. Up renting an apartment.
Oh,
so,
no.
Yeah. I still check in with her.
So yeah, we're... yeah, well, I don't want to put it personal. Hopefully it's a sick ass apartment.
Yeah, I hope.
Sorry, the real reason I came was to drink Pat's whiskey. So yeah, that's the real reason why I took on that podcast. So yeah, we remodeled the house, sold it, looked at 74 houses, ended up in Richmond Heights, planned a wedding, 2020, dude, and all this happened. And like the theme for 2021 was like, if we can do all this shit, we can do anything together.
Yeah, it's true. For sure, you know, dude, you did a lot of shit.
Dude, 2020 was a wild year. And, you know, we started this company with my, with Max and Chris, and man, I've never looked back. The most, it's like one of the most fulfilling things for me is that we get to do our work on our terms, our way. Like, who do you answer to? Well, Chris and I and Max make these, a lot of decisions together. Chris ultimately, I think, carries a lot of weight when it comes to like decisions of things in the field. I run the crew of guys like a little directly. Again, like I like to really be hands-on. I like to be there, man. It's to the point in my career where like I know what needs to be done. If I have questions, I'll go to Chris and be like, hey, this is what I'm planning on doing. This is how I think we need to approach this. And he'll be like, yes, no, or change this a little bit or do this a little bit. There's a couple of things we do, mainly because it's like super dangerous, where I'm like, hey, Chris, you should be very involved with this. and he does, man. He's sharp, man. He's just sharp. He just, you know, he's done the justification. And then I think it's a great one when like a way we want to do something kind of gets shot down is Chris is like, I've done it this way. I've done it every way you could do this. And the way I'm telling you to do it is the best way. So when I think about decisions that have to be made in the field when it comes to like our actual work, that's always playing back in my head. It's like, well, the way Chris showed me to do it was this way. And the way that he told me to do it this way is because he's done it 10 other ways and this way was the best way. So I don't want to waste a lot of time doing this like trial and error thing. And I've had to have conversations with guys that like work for us. Like, well, you know, why don't we do it this way? We should try to do it this way. Like, well, the best way to do it is the way I'm telling you to do it. And like then it's like I had this like light bulb moment where like, oh, Chris told me this, used the same fucking line on me.
Yeah.
You know, 5 years ago. And like now here I am doing it, man. So yeah, hats off to him, man.
Yeah.
That's so awesome.
I guess around just after 2021, is that when you got back into jiu-jitsu?
2022, I came back to jiu-jitsu, yeah. I did a stint in jiu-jitsu from 2012.
Did a stint.
Yeah, man. I had a little stay. I did some jiu-jitsu from 2012 to 2014. Loved it. Was very involved. Took a 9-year break.
Where was that at?
It was in O'Fallon, Illinois. It was on the Illinois side.
Okay.
What was the reason for the stop?
This academy closed that I was in.
What for?
The guy that owned it went to prison.
Oh,
oh good.
Yeah. Which is a good reason to close your jiu-jitsu academy,
absolutely.
By the way.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah. That guy went to prison. I don't know if the internet knows this or if you guys know this, but you cannot have a sexual relationship with a 15-year-old student as a 30-something-year-old male.
Nope. That's frowned upon.
Yeah, it's definitely frowned upon, okay. And you'll go to prison for that. So, and ironically, they'll close your jiu-jitsu academy.
Ironically.
Yeah, man. I did jiu-jitsu at a place in O'Fallon. For legality reasons, I'm not going to name drop a lot of shit.
Yeah.
There's a lot of info on the internet. I'll tell you guys all about it later. Yeah. <off the air. laughs> yeah, I trained there for like 2 years. And again, it was a time, you know, I was, like I said, man, I had a hard time making ends meet back then. So I, in a roundabout way, like kind of got sponsored by the gym as a friend of a friend kind of thing. My best friend who trains at Watson's now too, was teaching kids classes there and was like, hey, I can physically see that you're not in a great place. And I think doing jiu-jitsu will benefit you. You should come. And I was literally like, I would love that, but I cannot afford gym fees. He was like, don't worry about gym fees. Just like come feel it out. Like, see if you like jiu-jitsu. Did it for a couple weeks. Fell in love with it instantly. I did two jiu-jitsu classes and then I did an in-house tournament and actually won some matches in an in-house tournament that the gym held. And then basically like worked it out to where I would help teach some classes, kind of like what you do with the beginner class.
Yeah.
And like what like Remington and some of the guys do in our gym,
yeah.
Like walk around, help out. You know, I did that kind of thing. He's like, don't worry about your gym fees. Help out at the gym. Clean the mats. When we do like in-house tournaments, you'll pack the mats up. You'll set them up. Stuff like that. So I traded labor for a gym membership.
For a gym membership, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I love jiu-jitsu, man.
Dude, it's life-changing.
And then after like the big, the big fallout, I was just like honestly depressed and fucking sad and just like put a lot of energy into different stuff. You know, I started really diving into my career more. I got a lot of opportunities through work. Started working with Chris shortly after the gym closed. My daughter at the time started kindergarten, so it was just like spread pretty thin. And then, came to Watson's in 2022.
Yeah, dude.
And again, never looked back.
Yeah, what a great culture.
I'm going nowhere, dude.
To join. I mean, I've trained elsewhere before coming to Watson's, and just like the just the culture Kyle's created and everything. It's just, it's unmatched.
It is next level.
I mean, just everything that we, just the way that things are taught there. I mean, even like stuff that we're going over right now, all this leg lock stuff. And it's just like stuff that I feel like is, I mean, it might be being taught elsewhere, but nowhere around here, you know, at least in my opinion. Not
Dude,
that I know of.
I think that Kyle Watson has a gift of teaching. You know what I mean? I think, and it's apparent, you know, like you go to seminars somewhere, maybe you go to like, you do like a drop-in class, maybe you go out of town and do a drop-in class somewhere. When I go to someone else's class, I'm like, wow, it is very apparent that Kyle Watson has a gift for teaching this. You know what I mean? I mean, aside from being fucking great at jujitsu.
Yes.
I mean, the dude's a third degree black belt? Like, yeah. It's not because his jujitsu sucks. You know what I mean? Like, no, he knows a thing or two about jujitsu. But man, the way he has, the way that he can deliver things and make you understand them is like, it's nothing I've experienced.
Yeah, he's got a degree in teaching, I believe.
Yeah, I believe. That's correct.
So, mm-hmm. I mean, it just totally correlates to what he's doing. And yeah, and just, he breaks everything down into a system, and like, he just like has such a good, and he's been doing it for so long that there's not a, much like Chris, he's probably done it 10 different ways, and this is the way that I've found is the best.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he's going to show you that way, but he'll also show you, you know, the top other two or three that, you know, maybe don't work as well, but hey, maybe this one works better for you because everybody's a little different. And just the culture that he's created at the gym is, I mean, it's unmatched. I mean, the kind of people that are there, and I'm so thankful for it every time I walk through those doors.
Bro, same. And I tell Kyle that. I tell Kyle, like, I got my, not to brag, but I got my third stripe last week. and I think every time I've had those moments with Kyle, you know, like when you get a stripe or you get a belt promotion, that's a special moment with your coach. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And it lasts 15 seconds tops, dude. Yes. That's a special moment, dude. And I think every time that I've been called up for something like that, I have told Kyle every time, dude, I appreciate you. I appreciate you so much, dude. And then he typically reciprocates with, no, I appreciate you.
Yeah.
man, yeah, the culture at Watson's is great. You know, everybody knows the Kyle story. Yeah, he was on the Ultimate Fighter. He fought in the UFC. Those are big parts of his life, I think. But I think the thing that brings Kyle the most joy is teaching students jiu-jitsu in his gym.
I agree.
Yeah, we had a really good episode with him that we could never air because audio reasons.
Yeah, the audio just like cut out.
What?
Like halfway through. Oh, yeah, heartbroken.
Yeah.
Hopefully that doesn't happen here.
Well, we're actually having him on next week.
Yeah. Oh, no, so, shit.
That'd
be a good one. So, yeah. He's an entertaining guy.
Oh, yeah. He's got stories for days, and he's just.
What's your nickname from him?
I don't have one, man.
Oh, he hasn't got. Oh.
He calls me Brian. And then I actually drill a lot with the other Brian, Purple Belt Brian.
Okay.
And he calls us Brian Squared
when we
drill together. Yeah. So I don't have an official nickname. I'm sporting this black eye, and I thought maybe he'd come up with something from there. Nothing still, man. Oh. Kyle, if you hear this, I need a nickname.
Maybe that's why he's so good at just remembering names.
Yeah.
He just remembers.
Well, that's, dude, the way he remembers names.
I was going to say that, like, Kyle is, look. He'll beat you up, okay? If you're listening to this, he'll beat your dad up, okay?
Yeah. Oh, sure.
Kyle does a lot, man. He's pretty accomplished in his line of work. The thing I'm the most impressed with is that he knows the name of every student in the gym, dude. And there are hundreds of students.
Yeah, I mean,
he knows everyone's name.
I mean, there's got to be over 300 members at this point.
Well, shit, he knew my name, but like before I met him. Like, I walked up and he goes, "Oh, you're Pat, you're Zach's friend." I'm like, what? How the fuck do you know?
Yeah.
I'd be like, Zach who?
Yeah.
Never heard of her.
Never heard of her. Well, the whole ball busting thing, I feel like that's a part of your, the culture and the trades. You guys are just always busting each other's balls. And
it transcends to most areas of my life. And sometimes it is not well received. if you can imagine. Yeah. Like, you know, like I was kind of like talking shit to Pat, like before we started recording, like I was kind of like roasting him a little bit. Yeah, man, it's just like, even in the gym, like, if I talk some shit to you, it's because I like you, dude.
Of course.
It's a love language for me, for sure.
Like,
even
if I don't
in the
like
gym,
you, I'm not going
to
talk to you.
100%, dude. Like, in the gym, you know, I kind of, like, talk some shit in the gym, always to people that are way better than me. Always to people that will act, like Jeremy Fernandez.
Yes.
Jeremy Fernandez is one of my favorite training partners, man. Jeremy's, like, a blessing in the gym. The dude will teach you so much. He's so good at jiu-jitsu. I talk shit to Jeremy all the time.
Yeah.
Because he's always talking about how he's old, you know, et cetera.
He's like, got bad knees.
Yeah, you're old and you're beat up, dude. Like, let's go. You know what I mean? then Jeremy will beat my ass for the whole 6 minute round or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's like same thing. Like, dude, I'm talking shit to you because I respect you big time, dude. I have mad respect for you. Mad respect for your game. Like he teaches some classes, you know what I mean? And Jeremy is a guy who will submit the shit out of you. And then if you ask him, he'll be like, this is how I did it, man. Like, do it this way next time. Do this next time. So yeah, the roast culture. There's a lot of shenanigans that goes on, man. Even in my house, there's some shenanigans. My wife is pretty over it, if we're being honest. She's a pretty good sport, man. She puts up with a lot of shit. But yeah, job site shenanigans are wild.
Yeah? What's a crazy like prank or anything that didn't come to mind?
I mean, it's important to realize that like these people that I work with, even before I started, you know, River City Iron Work, I'm side by side with these guys 8, 10, 12, sometimes 14 hours a day. It's difficult to not get close to these people, you know. I always say all the time, you can only talk about hunting and fishing for so long before you like
you just talk about everything.
Yeah. Like I know these people, like even the guys that work for us, like I know these people on a very personal level. Like I care about these guys deeply, man. Like these people, I spend more time with them than I do my wife and family. You know what I mean? So that, you know, to say that there's some friendly roasting that goes on and other ridiculous shenanigans is a gross understatement. I would say all the time that they should film like a Discovery Channel show about us. Yeah. That shit would get canceled so fast, dude. Like, it's gonna get canceled instantly. Yeah. If you can imagine, there's a lot of very masculine macho energy. You know, we're big time construction workers. We're so tough, you know? So with that being said, there's also a lot of phallic shaped drawings that end up
phallic shaped
all over the place. You know, that's like a common thing. It's just like
just dicks being drawn.
Draw dicks. Literally. I have a guy that I partner up with a lot. His name's Jason. Again, like I've known Jason for a lot of years, man. I ride that dude pretty hard, but it's, you know, it's like younger shithead brother kind of vibe. You know?
Yeah.
Jason had a pack of brand new leather gloves that are white. This is important to the story. And he stashed them away behind his seat in the truck. There's like four or five pair in there. He goes to do something. I find the gloves. A treasure trove. So I take the gloves, I take an ink pen, and I draw a dick on the face of every glove in the pack. I rearrange them. Like I put them back so they're stacked up in here, put them back in the...
So that he can't see the top.
Can't see the top of them. Yeah.
So he's got to put them on and be like, fuck.
So fast forward like a month, it's time for Jason to bust out the new gloves. He opens them up, puts them on, everything's fine, gets to work, is like, hey man, what the fuck, man? He starts like pulling all the gloves out, dicks on everyone. Dude, there's dicks on every one of these, you know? So he goes with a group of guys. He goes, we're putting we call it a Connex, which is like a shipping container. Okay. We call them a Connex. And we're like kind of working on one for storage and stuff at our yard. We get a steel door with a steel frame that we're going to cut out the back of it. We're going to put the door in. So Jason and a couple guys go to this door supplier in North City, right across the river from where our yard is. The lady that is working the counter who owns this business is like, dude, I swear, 75 or 80 years old, right? We pay for a door and like they're getting the stuff out and Jason's going to help load it on the truck. Puts those white gloves on them, dude. And that lady goes, oh, I really like your gloves. Dude, somebody's grandma is telling you she likes your dick gloves. Like, there is no more flattering compliment. That's a good one. When I was on EADS, you know how, like, obviously there's, like, porta-potties on job sites, sure. Man. The anatomy of a porta-potty is important for job site shenanigans. There's like a bowl, basically, and there's like a vent tube that comes out of the top. It goes through the roof to vent the thing so it doesn't smell like shit all the time. The vent goes directly into the bowl, which you are seated on if duty calls. Right. They took a guy once, and his name's Joe. He went in there and sat down, and They took a fire extinguisher and shot that fire extinguisher down the vent tube.
Oh no.
Filled the whole Johnny with like white cloud smoke. You just swore he was hotboxing the thing, man. It was, dude, you know, have you ever seen a grown man run out of a shit house like bare ass with his pants around his ankles, man? But you know, it's all in good fun, right? What goes around comes around. So like same thing, you know, yeah, like
coming back to you.
It always comes back around, man. Yeah. Those, you know, and like the example with Jason, you know, how I drew dicks on all his gloves. Like there was a lot of guys coming up that were really hard on me, man. You know, I was the butt end of a lot of jokes. And I don't mind that. I, you know, dude, you should laugh more than you do anything, man. Like there is healing power in laughter. Well,
yeah. Right. You get pissed off at it. What is it gonna do? It's just gonna
exactly,
make man. It worse. It's just gonna feed into it even more.
You should laugh more than you do anything, man. So I have no problem like making an ass out of myself, being the butt end of somebody's joke. Like it never bothers me, man. And I know that stuff, you know, and I knew then, I knew 8 years ago when all these guys were doing this shit to me, you know, like it's going to come back around, dude. It comes back around. And then there's a ton of stories that I can't even tell on here for sure. So.
Well, shit, dude. Well, Brian, you got stories for days, bro. This has been.
It's been a blast,
bro. Dude, I'm glad I got to come on and, you know, talk to you guys, hang out a little bit, drink some of Pat's whiskey.
Yeah,
and,
yeah,
you know,
for sure.
Got this plenty of great. It.
What about you guys, man? I mean, Pat, you're, you know, you're in the lending portion of real estate, which I feel like is also like not credited enough. You know what I mean? Everybody sees the realtor,
right?
They see the guy showing the house,
yeah,
or girl,
right?
You know,
a lot of girls.
Yeah, we're the behind the scenes money guys. Yeah, it's a completely different world. It's not as sexy as the houses, and you know, a lot of it is just educating people. I wouldn't say that I'm a salesperson, but I'm an educator, just because I have to sell myself to agents and financial advisors to get them to send me business, refer business to me. But once I get clients, It's just all about educating them, making sure that they're getting the information that they need to make the best decision for themselves. And I always tell them, I'm like, listen, I'm not forcing any of these on you. You decide which one looks best. I can make these numbers make sense for you and help you understand that. But ultimately, it's your decision on how you want to do this. And I'm just here to facilitate that once you make that decision and once you find the house that you want. So, but yeah, no, I mean, it's fun in a different way. I get to meet and talk with a lot of people from a lot of different like walks of life with way different financials. Everybody's financial situation is different. And to be honest, like working with blue collar people are some of my favorite because they are the most appreciative of what we do. Like you got some people that make, you know, that know that they can get a loan and then wherever they want. And it's not as appreciated as like someone who doesn't think they can get a house and then you help them out and you're like, they're like, holy shit. Like I never thought this was possible. And it's one of the best feelings ever.
Right on.
So you're changing lives and helping them build wealth at the same time. So.
Yeah, dude, the non-sexy portion of stuff is just as important. You know,
oh, absolutely.
I feel that I kind of relate to that. Like the stuff that you don't see, you know, just like, even like with business ownership, yeah. You know what I mean? Like we talked about hate a little bit, Adam Marburger's book, talk about how hate is always upward. Like, I'll post these links to my social media. Like when this episode airs, I'll post the links.
Yeah.
There'll be people on my friends list that will discount success. You know what I mean? Behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Behind the scenes. They won't tell like, to my face. Oh, they won't tell to my face.
Yeah. I used to work on jobs with him when he was, you know, 6-8 years ago when he was, you know.
He was a dickhead then. He's a dickhead now. You know what I mean? Like, I'll get all that shit. People will hate. You know, people hate because they're jealous. And I kind of forgot where I was going with this, but no, but like, you know, I was talking about how, you know, seeing the not sexy side of things, like those people that like kind of give you the player hating attitude, like they don't see the sleepless nights. They don't see the long days. They don't see, you know, I talked about the crunch that we had.
Yeah.
Start, like the all the haters
crunch. Yeah.
All the haters. They don't see all that.
No.
No. And that they're not seeing all the other stuff that you've done for the last 4 years.
Yeah. They see us here talking and thinking like, well, it must not be that hard. Because you're sitting here having a podcast every twice a week. I'm like,
I had to schedule.
I've fine tuned my schedule 100%. And I'm so in tuned with how my schedule works that I'm still able to accomplish what I'm accomplished with my lending business and still have time to do this.
Dude, right on. Keep crushing it, dude.
Appreciate that. Yeah.
Also, you should have Zach put your face on like one of the yard signs, but like not put your name or anything on it. Just be like, you know,
this guy.
Yeah.
He's here too.
Give him some shine, a little bit of shine on the, you know, he's part of this process.
He's involved. Yeah. He's certainly involved. So, and that's why he's the most of the business that I do with my buyers is always through Pat. And if it's my choice, I would make everybody work with Pat, but you know, that's ultimately not my choice. You know, some people like have their guy or, you know, they think that they can get a better deal elsewhere or something, you know, but well, it's like,
just like you being in the union, it's a little bit more expensive up, you know, but long-term wise, you know, it's going to save you money. But like on our side, like I always tell people, like, I'm never going to have the cheapest rates. I'm never going to have the highest rates. Our rates are pretty solid. Our costs are low, but if you're not valuing the ease of a transaction, being very stress-free, because the purchase side is already emotional enough that we want to take that stress emotion out of it, and the efficiency at how quickly we can get things done, and like I said, the ease and proficiency with it. I mean, there's a cost that comes to that. You know, if you wanted the cheapest everything, okay, go to the bank or credit union and have fun dealing with that. It's a way different level of service and communication and things like that. And, you know, not to knock on them, they have their purpose and they're there for a reason. And, you know, I know that I'm not going to be for everyone and that's fine. And I'm okay with that. But I know that there's people out there that need my guidance, need the hand holding, need the communication, need that education side of it. And that's where my team and I shine. So
right on. Yeah. You know, I get team vibes from you, man. Even like when I walked in, like we just kind of started chatting. It was like, oh, this is the dude that's like, he's a team player. I feel a team player vibe here.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, we're a team for sure.
Hell yeah, buddy.
All right, man. Well, this is great having you on, Brian. This was a lot of fun. We appreciate everything. But before we get you out of here.
Got one last question. We call it the tombstone game. Here lies Brian. What's it say on your tombstone?
So I listened to the show fairly regularly, and I knew this was coming. I was like, I have to prepare for the tombstone game.
Yeah.
And here I am.
Yeah.
Not prepared for the tombstone game. I say misery is temporary, man. I say that a lot. That's not really what I probably want on there, but, yeah. you'd be surprised what you're capable of. That's like something that I would want probably put on there. You'd be surprised what you're capable of.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah. I love it, man. Well, thank you. Thanks again so much for coming on, taking time out of your busy schedule to come hang out with us for a little bit.
Right on.
And for all of you guys listening, please make sure you click that subscribe button. If you haven't done so already, that would help us out a ton. Click that like button as well. Comment what you thought below, and we'll see you next time.